Welcome to Cloud Native Startup, where we explore what it takes to build a company in the open source cloud native ecosystem.
I am Emily O'Meara, your host. Today, I'm joined by Michael Guarino, who is the co-founder and CTO of Plural. Michael, thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
Cool. Let's go ahead and start with just an introduction to Plural. I think this is a sort of a really interesting company that's doing something unique. So tell me a little bit about Plural, what it is, how it helps companies, and then we're going to get into questions like why it matters and why you're doing this. But first, let's start with what Plural is.
Yeah. So basically, Plural is an open source application distribution and management platform, all hosted on Kubernetes. So if there's an open source stack like Airflow, Airbyte, you name it, you can use Plural to generate all the deployment manifests and then execute them to create a deployment of Airbyte on your own Kubernetes cluster in your own cloud. And then the additional thing that's kind of unique to Plural is we also create a fully functional management ecosystem around that deployment. So everything from observability to over-the-air upgrades to an incident management portal to login security with OpenID Connect and SSO will all be handled by plugging that installation into the Plural ecosystem.
So do all kinds of open source projects work with Plural? I mean, anything from like, say, Drupal, which is a CMS, or like open recording software to some of the examples that you've just given? Or is it really just like back-end projects that are in the Kubernetes ecosystem?
Yeah, anything that has a server-side component theoretically is a good fit for Plural because it can be deployed on Kubernetes. There are some open source projects that are valuable in and of themselves, but aren't really what we're targeting. So things like libraries or frameworks, you probably have hundreds of those within your code base. You're going to manage those with your build system, obviously. And then also very client-side focused applications like dbt or feast.dev that actually are basically entirely a CLI. There will be components that you can deploy with Plural, but the since it's a client-side application, we don't really handle that. You're going to have to use Homebrew or whatever to install that command line and manage it yourself.
And so how exactly does Plural make things easier? Like, what's the advantage of using Plural instead of just, you know, doing it myself?
Yeah. So let's just take like as an example to talk around is Airflow, for instance. So if you're going to try and figure out how to self-host Airflow, it's going to be an interesting journey. So first thing is you'll have to figure out like how, what sort of infrastructure you want to putting it on. Kubernetes is what you probably should be moving to, but a lot of people will like find some sort of like pre-baked AMI or whatever to deploy the entire Airflow with. You're gonna have to read a lot of the docs to dive into exactly how to set up all of its different components. Airflow has a number of them. It has a Postgres database you probably need. It'll have something to manage its celery workers, so something like Redis or RabbitMQ is oftentimes used. And then it has a number of different deployable components, a web server, a worker tier, a scheduler component, and then you have to figure out load balancing, all of that. So it ends up becoming quite a hard slog. I think conservatively, you're looking at like a month's worth of work for one of your DevOps guys to figure out how to do it if he hasn't deployed Airflow before. You'll effectively have all that work eliminated by using Plural. We've already gone through the effort of doing that, and so the rest of the industry doesn't have to do it over and over and over again. The other thing you get is because we deliver upgrades for it, on each new version of Airflow, there could be an architectural change that requires you to completely reconfigure how it's being deployed. We figure that out during each time we package an upgrade, and we'll just deliver it straight into your cluster, and you'll just have to choose what sort of release channel you want to be subscribing to, and you'll get that upgrade without any effort, as if it were a completely hosted SaaS service, basically.
And so take me like a little bit on the journey of like what situation would be best for complete DIY versus Plural versus like a fully managed version of Airflow. And I'm imagining that that's what the continuum looks like, that using Plural is better than, or easier, I should say, than DIY. I don't want to use the word better, but not quite as easy as just like a dedicated managed service.
Yeah. So like full do-it-yourself versus Plural, it's an interesting question. I honestly struggle to see a case where someone would really want to do that, but my guess, what would force them into choosing to truly self-host it using all their own tools would be like they're in a financial environment that like they have to have extremely strict processes around how every single one of their systems are deployed. And for whatever reason, Plural doesn't fit into the processes that they've laid out for themselves. And so they have to, you know, they have to self-manage. Then like a fully hosted version of Airflow, Astronomer is actually a company that's, that's offering that, but also a lot of the clouds, there's the managed workflows on Apache Airflow for AWS, for instance. That's like obviously going to be ease of use and then peace of mind that a reputable partner like AWS is managing it. One thing that we've seen though, and we actually have users who have chosen to use our Airflow versus GCP's, is when you basically split up your infrastructure into multiple hosting providers, you create a problem around integration between different solutions. And this is really, really hard for like data infrastructure type components because they're going to be accessing all sorts of data sources in different network environments that oftentimes are segmented. So we couldn't really securely deploy both Airflow and Airbyte for this user because the Airbyte installation was on a Plural cluster and then the Airflow was in, you know, its own network within GCP. And it was pretty easy for us to say, hey, you know, like we can spin up this Airflow and it's just the same as GCP is doing. It actually is like legitimately, effectively an identical deployment. The GCP creates a GKE cluster to then host Airflow. We create a GKE cluster to then host Airflow. And they had a secured network to communicate over. So he was able to have his Airflow DAGs communicate with the Airbyte API to schedule jobs really easily as a result. That's the interesting trade-off. But there's 100% going to be a very large number of users who, you know, like maybe they accept that they might have these integration issues, but they just want the absolute minimum amount of operational overhead and they're going to want a hosted solution. And we're entirely okay with that.
I am just curious if you get locked in to Plural, mostly because I think one of the things people feel uncomfortable about, like saying taking the AWS Airflow, for example, is that this deepens their lock-in with AWS. So I'm just curious, like, well, what if I'm using Plural for everything? Like, how deeply am I locked into Plural?
Yeah, so that's an excellent question. And I've been trying to build the system in such a way that actually minimizes lock-in to as much as possible. So we're building almost 100% on standard open source tools. Like Kubernetes is one of them that I mentioned it already. The way artifacts are actually deployed uses open source standards as well. So for deploying the Kubernetes manifests, we use Helm, and then we use Terraform for provisioning cloud resources that are not able to be like managed within Kubernetes, things like object stores, S3, GCS, stuff like that. And then the way that the system is built is you effectively have the Plural CLI, you run Plural build, and it will actually generate all of the deployment manifests in your own Git repository. The cool thing about that, it's effectively what you get is the end result if you had that DevOps engineer spend a month of figuring out how to deploy Airflow. And you could legitimately just take that GitHub repository and run and execute the Helm and Terraform commands directly, and it would be entirely functional. So that's our goal. We have this ejectability is what we call it for all of our applications. And we want to keep people around by providing value instead of providing technical login like you would have if it were a purely proprietary layer on top.
So let's go back a little bit to talk about some of the journey here. Can you, I mean, like, how did Plural come about? Where did you get this idea? How did you and your co-founders decide that this is a problem that needed to be solved?
Yeah. So it's largely my brainchild, and it came from a number of weird little insights I had as an engineer. The first one that's very contrarian is I realized from my time at Vine, I was one of the backend engineers who built Vine's APIs and platform. And a usual thing we had was we actually basically self-managed all of our infrastructure, short of like AWS EC2 VMs. And that included like an incredible amount of MySQL usage, a huge Elasticsearch cluster, a lot of RabbitMQ, a lot of Redis. And when I came in, I was like, you guys must be insane. This is like way too much for a team of five people to be managing. And I was completely proven wrong. So having seen that, I always had an aversion from to the entirely managed infrastructure model that a lot of the clouds have been pushing more and more to, and obviously monetizing a lot from. But eventually Vine was discontinued. I was part of the shutdown team, moved on to another company, and I kind of realized exactly why that has a huge place in the market. And it's the extreme scarcity of operational expertise in the industry is the biggest driver. So like, it's very hard to find an engineer with like 6 or 7 years of experience running distributed systems. A lot of these platforms are extremely new, And that's a very rare sort of person. And then you have to have a very broad range of CS knowledge to be able to do it. You have to know everything down to from Linux fundamentals all the way up to like distributed systems concepts like Paxos and other like consensus algorithms. And then you have to have a lot of like battle scars to know where things typically blow up in a large scale system. And we couldn't actually build what we wanted to build oftentimes at Frame.io as a result. We wanted to deploy Airflow at Frame.io, but we couldn't do it because we had no one who could serve as the operational owner within the entire organization. It was like me who could theoretically be it and one other SRE. And he was completely tapped out on security. So that was kind of like generally like how I sort of understood the space. And then what really, really changed around like 2019 is Kubernetes absolutely started taking off. And it specifically, you started seeing really low cost managed control planes everywhere. And it was very apparent to me that the potential of Kubernetes technically should mean that you should be able to create a lot of effectively software managed open source installations. A lot of the stuff that theoretically is being, you know, isolated in a team in the back end of AWS could just be turned into Kubernetes operators and software that that autonomously manages a lot of these systems. And there could be a lot of disruption for this business model I had come to like think is not really that great. And so I wanted to build that. And that's what ended up leading me to figuring out all the little details that have become Plural as a platform.
And tell me a little bit more about this, like the moment. I'm always interested in sort of the trigger. Like, what was the moment when you were like, yeah, this is, I'm quitting my job and I'm going to go after this?
Yeah, so I was like basically hacking on it in my free time. It was sort of building some applications on Kubernetes to push its limits. And then I started figuring out more about like how to do repeatable deployments of full like stacks with Kubernetes. And I just like basically in the process of hacking sort of got more and more conviction on like, okay, this is definitely really viable. Like you can have a very consumable experience of spinning up an application on Kubernetes and making it very repeatable and like effectively having a way of distributing these complex things that before were just like an absolute hassle to figure out extremely, extremely quickly. And then from there, it was pretty clear, like I could sort of piece together, okay, there's definitely a monetizable business around this, and that's probably worth venture funding. And so I went through the process of figuring that out. It was a bit of an interesting journey because like once I started that was about February of 2020. And obviously we know what happened in March of 2020. So I had to like go through the process of like initially talking to venture while like COVID lockdown was happening. And that was fun, but eventually it all worked out.
And then how did you meet your co-founders?
Yeah, so we did an incubation round with a venture firm called Primary Ventures. I started that in 2021. And Sam Weaver, my co-founder, was actually an advisor for Primary for like, you know, a lot of their potential investments and portfolio companies and stuff like that. He had a lot of experience in open source. He was actually formerly at Red Hat and MongoDB. And he'd also seen like in the process of, you know, his career, people having problems with standing up these really complex stacks of infrastructure. And was immediately like, oh, this is a really cool idea. And we you know, spent a long time talking about it, collaborating, and eventually he decided to make the leap and actually join as CEO and co-founder.
Cool. Tell me a little bit about like how the process has gone, sort of what, like walk me through, you know, from starting in 2020 to now. What's the journey been like?
Yeah, so initial conversations with venture was mostly just like testing the waters to see if this was a good idea and something that was fundable, and also figuring out how to, like, you know, network in that arena. I was building things independently at the time as well. I used the, you know, the downtime, the lull to work on the product and make sure it was technically viable. A lot of what we did at early 2021 was like what you would do in incubating a company. So creating the brand, that's actually how the name Plural came about, was that we decided on that sometime in like March of 2021, creating the initial team, that's, you know, getting Sam on board as co-founder was a big part of that. And then marketing materials and then polishing off the final product, the beta product that we now have, which is the full Plural platform and the ability to deploy all the applications that we have currently supported. So I was coding a lot, obviously. At the end of 2021, we raised our seed round, which we just announced. So it was a $6 million round led by Signal Fire, but also with participation from Primary and SUSE Ventures, which is like the kind of the capstone of the work from 2021. And now we're trying to go like, you know, full steam ahead to get people on the platform using it, hopefully driving a lot of value from it. That's really the goal.
And what have been, there's like two ways that I like to ask this question. I like to have something that's been unexpectedly difficult, and then the sort of flip side of that is, what is something that's been unexpectedly easy?
Yeah, that's interesting. So I think hiring, especially early stage, I've never had to be involved in a company at this stage. I joined Frame.io as like when they were basically about to raise their A round, which was a little, obviously a lot more mature than we were like last year. It's a lot more difficult. You have to sell much more aggressively because obviously the entire venture is still it's not de-risked in any meaningful fashion. And especially getting those first few people in the door, like you really have to, you've got to bond pretty closely. You've got to make it very clear that you're the person that you want to work with for a couple of years. And that's an interesting thing. And then hiring, you know, once you have a lot of capital as well, it is interestingly tiring. Like it's kind of an inherently unscalable thing. You have to devote basically 2 to 3 hours for each candidate, and you're probably going to be interviewing like 100 candidates. So you can sort of do the math on like, this is going to take a long time. So that's been an interesting learning. The things that weren't as hard or surprisingly easy. Okay. So I have two for this. One thing that's interesting is actually hiring DevOps people for this specific business has not been hard, which is like the complete flip side of what it's normally like for companies that they like struggle mightily. But it's obviously because the product is so like, you know, in line with what their interests are. They're like, oh, I can work on a product that's like entirely Kubernetes stuff. I love Kubernetes. I want to join this.
I just wanted to say that you're not the first person who has said this. I feel like people say it often enough that I do think hiring a DevOps team for your startup, addressing a problem, you know, like this, a really DevOps heavy problem, is way easier than hiring DevOps people for your, you know, team at, I don't know, BP Oil or something, or Bank of America.
Yeah, it definitely makes sense. But I was, you know, definitely like bracing myself to spend months trying to find these people. And we were able to actually find excellent candidates like off the bat. We've also, I think open source also opens a lot of doors with this. We've had people like we were just sort of like working with and collaborating with, like just ask us to join because they were really interested in the product and the space. And I don't think that's something that's common at all, but it's like when you build in this way, I think it people want to be a part of that more. The other thing that's a lot easier than I was expecting at all, and I think a part of this is being open source, and obviously part of it's being venture funded, but I think a lot of it's open source, is getting at least your foot in the door at a lot of big enterprises when you're an open source company. It's a lot easier. So they have very credible people oftentimes internally at the company who are running open source offices, have a lot of sway, and are extremely, extremely invested in making sure that open source succeeds. And you can almost always get a conversation with these people. I mean, they're busy, obviously, but they're going to want to talk. And so like, there's definitely like a big advantage by being open source in terms of getting like, you know, that initial foothold at companies that ordinarily would take like, you know, a year of sales work to get some degree of like, you know, pull there.
Speaking of being an open source company, well, first of all, I realize I'm not totally clear on this, or possibly I don't remember, but is Plural itself open source?
Yes. Yeah. Sorry. Yeah. We should have mentioned that. The entire code base for Plural is open source. And we're technically like dual licensed, but you can use any of the code from Plural under, mm-hmm. I think it's Apache license. So
excellent. I am really fascinated by this because it feels like you have this sort of interesting dynamic between Plural and, for example, someone like in our earlier example, Astronomer, who's offering a managed service of an open source project. I mean, how do you see that relationship and how is it in practice? Like, your relationship with these companies, of course, being made up of people, like how is your relationship with the people who are trying to monetize the open source projects and could, I think, reasonably see Plural as a threat?
Yeah. That's something that we're definitely like working with. We have designed it in a way that we hope would not be perceived as competitive. So like what we're really sort of living in is in the self-hosted space for a lot of these open source companies. And usually that's very unmonetized. I mean, you can sell enterprise licenses to people who are self-hosting, but the large portion of their monetization effort is mm-hmm. around a cloud offering. But what we've seen, or at least we've gotten some degree of evidence behind, is about 90% of the adoption for a lot of open source projects are actually self-hosted. So it's the majority of their usage, but not the majority of their monetized usage. And the idea is, for those vendors, we can provide a lot of interesting values for that part of their usage. One of them is lead capture. So like when you sign up to Plural, you obviously give us your email, and then you'll start creating installations. That'll be registered in our systems to provide you with updates. But we can also help send that to vendors to potentially sell enterprise license against or something like that. And there's also going to be a monetization engine in Plural as well, so that you can have an enterprise tier of all the services that are on Plural as well that could be theoretically monetized. But that said, like, we've definitely had some people who, you know, they sort of do the math, and they're like, maybe some people who would have been choosing our cloud product would actually just deploy in Plural, and we lose a little bit of revenue from it. So we had to sort of figure out ways to make sure that that doesn't happen, or at least they don't have their business impacted by being a partner with Plural. That said, we have had a number of companies already who are willing to put us on their docs, get involved in their community and everything like that. Specifically, Airbyte and KubeCost have both been really, really great about this. So I think that we'll be able to, you know, keep repeating that and getting more and more, like, actually as official vendor relationships, hopefully. But it's something we have to look out for sure.
And so I'm actually just curious, if somebody did have like an enterprise license of an open source project that they were going to totally self-host, would Plural be able to help them with that? I mean, that's just because they have the enterprise license, that gets support, but that's not necessarily like a two-click install.
Yeah. It ideally should be completely compatible. You basically usually will have a license key that will enable all those enterprise features that you can sort of plug into the installation, either with like a command line argument or an environment variable or something like that. And we'll be able to make our deployment artifacts easily configurable to inject that license key if needed. But, you know, you would get the hopefully like simplified, streamlined management of the application on whatever cloud provider you're going to be running it with Plural. So they should be very, very consistent with each other.
It is really interesting to think how that sort of fits into the overall ecosystem of commercial open source.
Yeah. One other thing that we have, but we haven't like put a lot of attention to, but we have an incident management portal as well that's in our console that's meant to help with some of the support burden that ends up happening with a lot of these installations, and creating like a centralized way of handling that as well. So we've talked with a number of OSS vendors who actually see that, and they're like really, really happy because they had to build it themselves. It's not part of their core product, and they don't want us to have to do it. And it's seeing like a company that could, you know, specialize in basically building this entire operational environment is really valuable to them as a result.
Do you think, though, that using something like Plural would almost discourage the users from becoming like a real part of the community? I mean, do I want to say that it's an advantage that people have to spend a month to actually, you know, make the project functional? But I can also see how you could argue that having like Plural in between creates this layer of abstraction that might not be good for building like a real community around a project.
Yeah, that's interesting. I think we're too early to know for sure. One thing I do think is a real big benefit, though, what we're trying to do is like just create a standardized environment for deployment ultimately. And what is nice about that is a lot of open source projects are interdependent. So if you're Postgres, you're going to be in a number of other applications like Airflow, Airbyte, and like all these full stack applications. And then if you're like a Redis, you're also going to be comparably interdependent. The data stack oftentimes has a lot of synergies with each other. It's really good to deploy Airflow with Superset, with Airbyte, with a data warehouse, you know, like, and get that full experience. So what we think is, by being able to plug into Plural, you can plug in with all those other adjacent applications that you're going to be ultimately dependent on to provide the full value of your product to your users. And they can just get them all in one shot. And so that's like the real benefit of having this layer on top. And hopefully that will actually drive more and more adoption for a lot of these products, because they effectively get tapped into network effects with the wider technical ecosystem. But like, whether they like, you know, sign up to the specific Slack that they should be signing up to get a part of the community or not, is that that's interesting. I'm not sure how that would actually pan out. It's definitely something that could theoretically be something that we'd want to like, we want to help with. So we have like a redesign for our listing pages, for instance, for all the applications that will have Discord links and GitHub links. So people will be directed to the appropriate places for the open source project to either give stars or like get more plugged in. So it, like maybe we would want to be building more tooling to make sure that people get plugged in with the communities of the applications that they're using.
And does it take a DevOps person a month to set up Plural? I mean, we mentioned that Plural is an open source, you know, project itself.
Yeah, hopefully not. We've seen it take about like, in like a good case, it should take like an hour.
Oh, okay. That's not a month.
Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, like if they have some sort of installation problem, there might be additional time. And then like you might get everything stood up with Plural, but you might need to still integrate with existing systems within your infrastructure, you know, like a weird data warehouse on-prem or something like that. And my guess is there's going to be some degree of like meaningful integration effort if you do that. And that's harder to scope. But the actual like zero to application, it should ideally take about an hour.
Cool. And then how do you plan to monetize?
Yeah. So there's a couple of ways that we think that this is going to work. The first is we'll have an enterprise tier for Plural, basically, like you would have in a lot of other open source projects. And that'll have things that are features very meaningful to enterprise use cases of Plural, things like SSO, large scale multi-cluster management stuff, probably additional like powerful management features and governance features, like security scanning, private artifacts, everything like that. And that would be a paid offering. And then we would also ultimately want to have the vendors who are on Plural driving revenue and actually, you know, selling their enterprise offerings via Plural. And we would have a reseller agreement effectively with all of those vendors and take, you know, a platform fee for us driving that revenue to them. So there's like the dual monetization channel. That said, like we're open source, so we're going to always have a free tier. The free tier should be extremely functional. Like you should be able to go from zero to one of those applications that you want. And with a reasonably sized use case, just by downloading our command line tool, running the commands, setting up an account and everything like that. And we won't be billing it. And we also, we're not hosting anything. So you don't have to like, you know, put in credit card information to set up an installation, because it's not going to be our infrastructure. It's going to be your infrastructure. So we shouldn't be billing that anyways.
Excellent. I feel like we've only scratched the surface of sort of like almost what I see as like a vision for the open source ecosystem that I think is really interesting. So I think, you know, before we finish, I wanted to have you sort of talk about like, where do you see the open source going, and not just like the open source ecosystem, but also the commercial open source ecosystem? Because this is, Plural seems to be sort of like straddling the open source hippies, like it should just be easier to use free open source software, with like real pragmatic, yes, but how are we going to make this sustainable from a financial perspective? So yeah, like what do you see as like the future of open source and the future of commercial open source?
Yeah, so I think one of the things that got me extremely bullish about open source is seeing, especially in the process of working with venture, there's kind of like a new breed of SaaS company that's emerging right now. And they're actually open source first, or they're making open source be part of their go-to-market in a meaningful way. Airbyte, I've mentioned already, is definitely one of them. There's other companies like Anadian, Ori, AppSmith is one, like obviously DBT and some of those guys as well. And I think what's happening is like, in general, everyone knows that enterprise SaaS, it just like there's a ton of value being trapped in that entire industry. Lots of market cap that people want to find a way to sort of attack it and pull some of that value out. But there's not a good way if you use the standard SaaS model. Why would you make an ideal like clone of Slack if it's just basically the same? Like just use the thing that's working and is great. And what open source is providing is a differentiator to a lot of these people. You get a lot of things by being open source. You obviously get that customizability. You could theoretically fork the source code as an enterprise and like add whatever features or additional things you want, you can contribute to the source code directly and to the product roadmap in a very real way, which is really valuable for a lot of people. You can actually theoretically argue that the lifespan of the project can extend beyond the lifespan of the company as well. So you remove a lot of counterparty risk as a part of using the software. And then the big thing, I think, as well, is the ability to self-host, which is what Plural is solving. So like, there's obviously a lot of people who are might be interested in a product, but you know, like maybe the features are basically the same. But if you get a lot more security or a lot more privacy or the ability to manage GDPR regulations or stuff like that, then that's actually really, really powerful and really, really useful also in the data infrastructure space where you have all these like on-prem data warehouses that you need to integrate with if you're going to be using like an Airflow or something like that to run at scale data jobs. So like in general, there's this emerging, like I think, competitive wave of open source competitors to SaaS. But the thing is, if you have the current open source consumption experience that we have now, where it is this like, you know, month long journey to figure out how to get this thing working, it's probably not going to, like, once you get it working, it's probably not going to be reliable because you're kind of doing it yourself and YOLOing it, then it's truly not going to be actually competitive, right? So like, you know, the 0-1 for SaaS is, you know, signing up on a website, and the 0-1 for the open source alternative is this insane DevOps like journey. It's just, the thing is going to get killed in the crib. So that's kind of like a big part of why I really think Plural is really valuable in like bridging that usability gap that's currently there, and hopefully realizing some of the potential of open source being able to compete with a lot of these existing tech companies.
Cool. I think that was great. Well, anything else that you would like to add?
No. I really appreciate you giving me the time to talk about what we're doing. I guess what we could mention is if anyone's interested, we absolutely feel free to try out Plural, create an account, maybe spin up some things, or join our Discord as well. And we're there pretty often and absolutely excited for anyone to be a part of our community, help out, contribute, tell us what we're doing wrong. Anything, any feedback would be great.
Excellent. And Plural is plural.sh for any listeners who don't know. Where else can listeners connect with you or learn more?
Yeah, so we're on Twitter as well, plural_sh. We also, like I said, we have a Discord. The Discord link can be found on our marketing website that you'll be able to get us. And then our GitHub org is plural.sh, no space, no hyphen, no, it just all plural.sh as well. So you can check out our code there.
Cool. Excellent. Well, thank you so much for joining me, Michael. This was fabulous.
Yep. Thanks for having me. It was a lot of fun.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Cloud Native Startup. If you'd like to learn more about positioning, messaging, and go-to-market for open source and cloud native startups, head over to my blog, positioningopensource.com. You can also join the conversation on Twitter. I'm at Emily O'Meara, and you can feel free to reach out on Twitter or on my website and blog with questions or comments. If you enjoyed this episode, also please share and help more people discover this podcast. Thank you, and we hope to have you next week.